Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Blustery Wisconsin today?
A little on the chilly side. I think it's a balmy 17 degrees out right now.
Yeah, I was just outside. It was 81 down here. So
I almost feel bad for you.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to say the same, but I just can't. So I don't envy the ice and snow that the Midwest has had in the last few days. It's in fact one of our outsourced transcribers, one of the people that have been doing a lot of administrative work for us, lives up there.
Oh, really?
And they had like this ice storm, I guess, where they were at, and they were out of power for 3 days because a tree had fallen and, you know, blew a transformer down the road from them, and it took them so long to get it fixed because the roads were just so slick and it was just ridiculous. So
yeah, that's up in Green Bay area. We haven't hit it bad, but south of here, they've been just big snow, then a big pile of ice dumped on top of the snow, then another big snow. So.
Not helpful.
No.
Not a productive environment. Well, anyway, so let's go ahead and get started. For all of our listeners today and in the future, our guest today is Ron Achenbach, who is a martial arts school owner from right up by Green Bay, Wisconsin. What town are you in, Ron?
De Pere. It's a suburb of Green Bay.
Right, there you go. Good, De Pere. So a pretty good-sized, you know, city, pretty good-sized demographic, that type of thing, but, you know, still in the Midwest. So an interesting demographic mix up there. And you know, Ron, today what we wanted to talk about is, you know, a lot of things, unfortunately. We always have more topics than we have time for. But Ron has been a very successful martial arts school owner, has had a big growth curve in the school, and now very productive last couple of months especially. And I just talked to a couple of other members of the coaching group and the Millionaire Wealth Group who had all-time records in November. And I guess a couple things, one of the topics we want to touch on a little bit later today, Ron, is how to get your thinking straight so that winter doesn't have to be a slow time for you. And we'll make some headway on that.
Okay.
But also, you know, we definitely wanted to talk a lot about surrounding yourself with other successful people. And something that, obviously, Ron has been a long-time member of our coaching group with Stephen Oliver and with NATMA. And one of the things that we learned a long time ago about this type of thing is if you're an island unto yourself and if you're isolated and you've closed your mind and your ears and your eyes to learning anything new, then you can't expect, you know, any other results than you're getting.
Absolutely.
But as soon as you open that, you know, the floodgates open up. So we definitely want to talk a lot about that. Ron, give us just a little quick rundown on what your school looks like, the area that you're in, students, that type of thing, and that'll give us a basis to jump off.
Okay. Again, I'm in a suburb of Green Bay. Green Bay population is around 100,000. De Pere population around 18,000. School size, I'm in about 2,500 square feet. Right now, current student count's at about 150, anticipating that's going to grow rather rapidly here in the next couple of months due to some of the things that we talked about at our last mastermind meeting in Florida. And primarily kids, teach karate, probably 85% children, you know, 15-20% adults, somewhere in that area.
Sure. So very typical model of what the you know, quote unquote modern commercial martial arts school is.
Exactly.
And you're in a commercial shopping center?
Actually, I'm in a standalone building. There was a women's fitness center next door to me that went out of business about a year and a half ago. So I'm the only business in this building right now.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Well, good. Well, you know, definitely topic number one is for all the NAMA members. Of course, they know that we've got several, you know, newly implemented mastermind groups in the NAMA system. One is the Inner Circle, which is typically made up of school owners with you know, a very strong financial and strong student numbers, and it's very exclusive. We only have 20 people in the group total. And then we have the P Performers group, which is a little broader. We've got, you know, we're targeting roughly 75 to 80 members in that group. And the ultimate outcome of that is all about creating a culture of success and creating a creating an environment to surround yourself with that will help you become successful. And you know, we want to talk a little bit about that. Ron, many martial arts school owners have a very closed-minded approach to how they operate their school, either because of the culture that they were taught in martial arts or for some perception of the guy down the street being the competition. And in most cases that we've seen, that's simply not the case. But tell us a little bit about your thinking curve and a little bit about what you experienced over the last couple of years and how your thinking was and what it is today.
Well, initially when I bought this school about 7 years ago, I was part of a large organization. There's Karate America in Wisconsin. It was started up by Randy Reed back in the late 80s. Became a very large organization in the state, 20-some schools around the state. One thing led to another, and it kind of disbanded. So was fortunate enough to get in on that bigger picture mentality right away with some things, but it was not a tightly organized bigger picture, which was the big learning curve when I first started with Master Oliver with the regular coaching program was just that idea of systems in place, get your systems in place, get, you know, things dialed in. So that was a major playing part of that. The other thing was along the way, you know, kind of hit on some different organizations that had some great ideas that were, a little less than, what seemed to be a little less than ethical at times, which, you know, the upside of it was they taught us some tighter systems than what we were running. The downside, like I said, it was questionable as to the approach of getting money from people and the outcomes.
Right. Yeah. You know, let's talk about that a little bit because it's a I don't want to say a very common syndrome in the industry, but it certainly is a syndrome in the industry. And you know, for some reason, and you know, who really knows what the catalyst was, but for some reason in the last 5 years, maybe a little more, maybe 6 or 7 years. Since NATMA started about 14 years ago, there have been many, many, many other entries into the how to run a karate school market, and a lot of different opinions about how to run a successful business and how to run a high quality martial arts school, and obviously no one is gonna try to persuade someone that one person is right and one person is wrong, but what we can do is measure results, and certainly. One of the sweeping trends a few years ago was about, you know, taking cash up front for programs, and of course our philosophy on that is it's just like, you know, people have the opinion of you know, not to an excess, you know, to moderate everything, and that's our working opinion on taking cash for memberships, but there are some systems out there that preach as gospel. You should cash everybody out that you possibly can. You should severely discount the total value of the program so that you can get a one-time cash payment up front because your retention is so bad that you're going to make a lot more money up front and not have to worry about it when they go away.
Yeah, the motto was everybody quit.
That's right. And that's exactly right. And if that's the way you perceive your school, and if that's the way you feel about your school's impact on your students, then I think that that can be your opinion. That's absolutely fine. But ultimately, what can happen is all the money is gone. The students still remain with a whole balance of untaught lessons. And should there be an economic downturn, should there be a facility issue that costs some money, should there be any type of instability in the student base, and you've got major, major, major financial problems that could, you know, very easily put you out of business very quickly. So tell us a little bit about your experience on that. I know you had one of these negative experiences and were able to survive it, you know, to your credit. But tell us a little bit about what your experience was, and of course we can, you know, be general about names, but tell us a little bit about what your experience was and how you've come out of it, and we'll talk about what the future is too.
Okay. Like I said, initially it was, here's this great system of, you know, you're going to make a lot of money, you know, and here's this really tight system for doing it. And it was a tight system. Like I said, the upside of it was we had kind of weak sales approach coming in, didn't really have great phone tactics coming in. So the other side of it was we came out with a much better idea of how we needed to tighten those sales approaches up. The downfall, like I said, was the mindset was everybody quits. You know, that was kind of the mantra for a while, and so cash everybody out quick because they're all going to quit 10 days from now anyway. What was the part that didn't work for us was we tried real hard to keep our students as long as possible. So in turn, yeah, you had some really killer months financially, you know, just, you know, unbelievable months. But then I'll say next month you're starving and going, okay, now what am I going to do? And you're scrambling for new students, and you're, you know, it's feast and famine nonstop. So it was a big challenge that way. Like you said, it created a little bit of negativity as time went on. It was actually one of the reasons why our organization as a whole started to disband. It was just the different mindsets within our organization of going, you know, this just isn't quite us. And like I said, it ended up taking a very large school organization, and it kind of fell apart because of it.
Right. And you know, certainly there are a lot of factors that, you know, would factor into something like that. But one thing that you said that's very, very, I think, important, you know, the late popularity of the book The Secret, mm-hmm. and which of course we all know is basically just a rewrite of Wallace Waddles, The Psychology of Getting Rich, from, you know, I don't know, 50 years ago. But one of the things that you said is, as a martial artist, and we know this viscerally, but sometimes we get in our own way, the martial arts, in essence, is teaching integrity, right? Mm-hmm. And the point of the book, The Secret, is that your thoughts create reality, which means what you focus on the most expands, right? So if you're every day trying to think about how to solve a problem, in most cases, you'll figure out a solution, right? But if every day you're focused on the fact that the problem can't be solved, your brain stops trying to find solutions, right? So obviously, the point of the book, The Secret, was the things that you focus on expand and your thoughts create reality. And in most cases, that's absolutely true. By being in the mindset of get all the cash you can because everybody quits and they're going to quit pretty quick, you probably create people that quit.
Well, yeah, you start sabotaging your processes, and you start just kind of, yeah, between sabotaging your processes and going in with that, coming into your school every day going, geez, I got to go find 20 new people again because I cashed everybody out last month. You know, so just, yeah, it's an endless cycle of chasing your tail.
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly, and carry that one step farther. As a school owner, think about the things that you need to be thinking about, right? Number one, you need to be thinking about marketing. You need to be thinking about sales. You need to be thinking about instruction, and you need to be thinking about retention. Well, by being in the mindset of don't worry about it, everybody quits, you stop thinking about component number four. You stop thinking about how to increase retention. You stop thinking about how to create an environment that will keep students long term. You stop thinking about how do I implement the next system to plug the hole in the bucket, or how do I create the next event in my school annually or monthly or bi-monthly, whatever it may be, to really excite the students to want to be students forever. And that's the internal like torpedoing that you do on yourself. And like you said, you shoot yourself in the foot because you forget to think about one of the most important functions of your business, of your school, is retention, to keep the students forever. And that's exactly right. And another thing you said that's very important is being too overly aggressive on getting cash up front creates huge peaks and valleys, right?
Yes.
So you've got this astronomically high peak that's, you know, four or five times what you've done in the past. And then the next month you can't pay the rent.
Yep.
So, and in many martial arts school owners, they go out and buy the new Mercedes or they go buy the big house on the hill, and all of a sudden in our case in Florida, there's a hurricane and you've got to be closed for a week and a half, or there's a snowstorm and you can't have classes for a week, or, you know, something strange happens in your matrix, something unexpected or something odd happens in the business landscape, and you've got a valley where now you can't make the bills. And what our conception has always been, not just in Mile High Karate, but in many, many, many successful school operations, is that your ongoing residual billing check, your ongoing residual tuition, should be able to cover fixed expenses, payroll, rent, utilities, whatever. So regardless of what happens in a month with extra cash coming in, you can still pay the bills no matter what happens. So obviously, and that's the target now for you guys.
Oh yeah, I mean, but that was kind of one of the bigger eye openers from when I first started with Master Oliver was, you know, yeah, cash is great, but make sure you can cover your bases before you start worrying about the cash. And you know, our mindset prior to that was just, you know, yeah, let's try to, you know, if we get enough to kind of get us close to covering our bases, that's fine, but get a lot of cash yet. And it's like, you know, it doesn't work, you know. So that has been for the last, you know, especially a year and a half of really getting my monthly collections up to cover those bases. And I'm finally at that point. So it takes a huge amount of stress off of you.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I was just going to say, too. Just, you know, every day when you walk into the school on October 1st, you know that the bills are paid. And you know that now you can focus on creating something really substantial, creating a great experience for your students, creating all of these other things rather than scrambling around trying to figure out how to pay the bills, right? So that's exactly right. That's very liberating. Let's talk a little bit about that. So you said, obviously, one of the things that is very important in the school, and you said that you've got a great handle on this now, is making sure that you have those systems in place to handle the key functions in the school. And the four key functions, we talk about this all the time, is enrollments, renewals, retention, and quality. And in some cases, school owners focus on the enrollments and the renewals, but forget about the retention and the quality. And that's something that I certainly know that you don't make that mistake, and I know that we're very focused on that in our system as well. But tell us a little bit about what your curve has been on instituting those type of systems in the school and what a student experience is from the point of initial contact all the way up through, you know, enrollment.
Okay. For as far as experience-wise, you know, the big things that were a big hurdle at first that was systems. You know, nobody likes to put systems together. You know, it's work. It's laborious work, but the outcome is great. You know, my first thing that I really focused on, and it took me almost 2 years to do it, was my entire curriculum's laid out from first through third degree black belt. You know, so it's not like, you know, coming to school, it's like, okay, what am I going to teach today? I know what I'm teaching every day for the next 7 years. So that was a major load off once I had that taken care of, because now I have my other instructors come in and say, this is what you're teaching today, this is what you're teaching next week, this is what you're teaching next month. There is no, let's make something up as we go. We know exactly what's happening. And so that's a major part of it. So in turn, when somebody comes in the door, a prospect comes in the door, we have the system down for exactly how they go through the steps of that first introductory lesson, second introductory lesson, which we just started instituting, kind of following the Mile High format, the constant checks with them, of are you being serviced, are you being serviced, are you being serviced. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people miss is they come in and they say, all right, we got them in the door, we got them on a program, now let's hope they sign up to an upgraded program at some point. And it can't be that. It's got to be constantly, all right, is there something else you need? How else can we help you? and going above and beyond steps, and which, like I said, I'm still in some of the beginning phases with a few of those things, and it's worked, but you can tell in the attitude and the people that are here is way different than what it used to be. And so that's a huge deal. So, like I said, they, from the minute they come into the door until they're on a leadership program or they're getting ready to sign for a second degree program or whatever the case may be, it's constantly, what can we do for you?
Absolutely, yeah. That's extremely important. Let's make sure that everybody gets that. You know, I got to tell you, I've heard, unfortunately, this is kind of a sensitive topic emotionally for a lot of school owners, but in a lot of cases, as soon as somebody has good financial results, there's always somebody there to take a shot at them, right?
Yep.
Master Oliver and I laughed about a quote several months ago. It said, any imbecile can condemn, and most do, right? So what many school owners get in the mindset of, and this is probably not the case with most of our Maximum Impact members, and not the case in most of our NAPMA membership. But as soon as someone has good financial results or a lot of students or a big facility, all of a sudden they make a leap and think that that person is only in it for the money and that their student quality must be terrible because they're teaching so many students and that the quality of their communication with their customers must not be as good as mine because I only have 30 students or 50 students and I talk to my parents every day. When in reality, it's the opposite. The only way to have sustainable, strong financial and student quality results is to have all of the systems that you talked about in place. Consistent follow-up with your clients, consistent communication with your parents and with your students. So tell us a little bit about that. What you know, systems, so to speak, do you have in your school to guarantee that little Johnny's mom and little Johnny are engaged in your program from, you know, day one to day 50, let's say? What types of tools are you using, and what types of systems are you using to make sure that happens on a regular basis?
Okay, and it's still on an ongoing basis of trying to create more things. You're exactly right. The especially after I've been out to see the Mile High schools, it just blow their minds if they realize just how much information those people get. You know, I'm probably 1/10 of where Mile High is at with a lot of that stuff and what Master Oliver's done with it. But, you know, if somebody comes in, you know, we make sure, A, that we have a newsletter going out to them constantly. B, we have weekly emails, so we're in constant contact so they know what's coming up. Every class, we're announcing all the things that are happening and coming up, so they're on task with that. People who come in for the, like I said, a new enrollment or a new prospect, we have a series of letters that go out over the course of about 2 months. Just, you know, here's how you can help little Johnny have better self-discipline. Here's how you can help Susie be more confident, you know, and letters like that, just parent tips. We have one of the other things I started doing is the books, sending out, here's the How to Win Friends and Influence People book. You should read this. This would be good towards your little Billy learning how to become a better leader. You know, so it's those types of things that we do, just kind of inundate them with information that's useful to them.
Absolutely. That's an interesting point, too. Obviously, it's a huge, what you described is a very robust communication system using multimedia, right? You've got email, letters, you've got phone calls, you've got what the instructor's saying on the floor, you've got, I'm sure, flyers going home all the time, you know, calendars, all that sort of stuff. In some cases, I've heard a school owner say, well, you know, Toby, I send out a calendar at the beginning of the month. Why can't they remember there was no classes last Tuesday? Well, think about your life.
You can send out a calendar at the beginning of the month, send them an email every day, and tell them in class every day, and you're still going to have that one parent that's going to come up and tell you, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's the daily frustration for a school owner. But in addition to that, think about why that is. So this is an important, I think, distinction for a school owner to be conceptualizing their customer. think about the daily life of the mom of a 9-year-old, right? Probably a couple of 9-year-olds, right? But a 9 and a 6 or something like that. Think about their daily life. Think about what they do when they wake up in the morning. They're, you know, making breakfast, they're cleaning the house, they're getting the kids ready for school, they're getting the kids off to school, they're doing whatever they have to do during the daytime, they're busy getting things ready for the evening, the kids get home from school, they get the kids, they make sure that they get some food, they get them to the karate class, they take the karate class, they go back home, they're doing 10 other activities, right? Well, no wonder it takes a Herculean effort to communicate to that person, right?
Yep.
They're so busy. People have a whole life, right? They have so many things that are happening in their lifetime. That are in the day to day of their life, that of course a calendar once a month isn't really going to be enough of a communication process to make sure that they're engaged in your school. Certainly, it's a tool that you have to use, you know. But what you described is much more effective. You've got multimedia attacking that person. They're checking their email occasionally. They're getting a letter occasionally. They're getting a flyer sent home. They're getting postcards. They're getting, you know, that type of thing.
And another thing too, and this kind of goes off of what Dan Kennedy always talks about. You know, you got to contact people at least 52 times a year, or they're going to start quitting on you. They're going to go someplace else. You know, it'd be nice to contact them just about every day, but at least once a week minimum has got to be a must.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that goes back to what you said was very interesting. You said the information that you gave the parents about, you know, how to teach Johnny to be more focused, how to teach Johnny to be, you know, more self-disciplined. In addition to what you're teaching in the class, that's external support for the lessons that you're teaching in the class, which is brilliant to reinforce it that way. But what you said was really interesting, because you said we want to give them the information that they feel is valuable. And that's a very interesting distinction. A lot of martial arts school owners, in some cases, they think only about what they think is valuable, what the instructor thinks is valuable. Remember, the customer is the person that you're trying to serve, and we want to know what their needs are. So, and you said that several times. How can we serve you better? What can we do to help, you know, to help you with this? What can we help you to do with that? That's a perfect example. You know, I think it's great.
Yeah, and that's where you get that real strong retention. That's one of the things our school's always been pretty strong with. Our retention. Our retention keeps getting better all the time. You know, we're running typically 80% plus on retention, and that's a big part of it, is just we keep them informed and we keep that constant communications open with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And okay, good. Let's kind of transition on that. And we've got a student experience from, you know, from a new student to an enrollment standpoint, and from an enrollment forever in my history of my martial arts career, I'm going to be, you know, have high and very robust communication processes.
Mm-hmm.
What about from a an operational standpoint with staffing and with on the floor activity?
Yeah.
What are my instructors thinking? You know, what are your instructors, you know, systems and processes for not just the curriculum, but to help facilitate an enrollment and facilitate a renewal and that type of thing.
Okay. Well, then I was just going to bring that up with what I was saying with all that constant information. I know a lot of school owners, especially because I remember being a small school owner, the only guy running the show, and it's like, holy cow, how do you do all this stuff? Well, part of it is just ask some of your parents that are in your school. You know, I had a mom come up the other day. It's like, you know, if you guys ever need help with your newsletter, I can do your newsletter for you. I'd be more than happy to do that. You know, so part of it is finding those resources within your school to make sure that those things are getting done. You'll definitely find people who want to help you out. If you're a good quality instructor and they like what they're seeing that you're doing with their kids, they will be more than happy to help you. They'll bend over backwards to help you sometimes. So, you know, that's a big part of it. From the operation standpoint, you know, you gotta have everybody trained. You know, my instructors go through an instructor's training program, pretty lengthy. Before they get into that, they got to be part of my leadership program, which kids early on learn kind of somewhat how do you teach. Because the same rules apply whether you are leading a group of kids in class or leading a Fortune 500 company. You know, you got those same types of mindsets in leadership. So, you know, it's developed in them from early on of, if you're going to be an instructor, you got to know how to lead people. You got to know how to lead yourself, build up out of there. So then, like I said, add that, compound that with the system of, all right, we have all your curriculum laid out from now to pretty much forever in your karate training career. You know, same thing in our office. We have scripts for how the intro process is done. We have scripts for phone calls. We have scripts for sales processes and enrollment conferences and everything. And as I said earlier, it's work at first, but man, it makes your life easier once you get it in place. You know, it's just a matter of taking the time out, forcing yourself to take that time out, do it, get it done. Is it going to be perfect? No. You'll always be touching it up here and there a little bit, but, you know, I think back to when I first started doing this stuff without any systems, and I was down in the school 7 days a week for a long, long time, just putting in umpteen hours each day, and now it's like, you know, I'm down in the school 5 days a week, six if I have to be. I try not to be. Summer comes, I golf every Thursday, go boating at least once a week. You know, so it's like there's still the work to be done, but with the systems in place, it allows me to do a lot of other things and have a life outside of the school.
Absolutely, and which probably deserves to be talked about a little bit. We spoke with Miko Paled a few weeks ago, and one of the things that he had, and we wanted to kind of touch on this a little bit with you as well. You're one of the new members of the Millionaire Wealth Group in the system, which basically is a group of school owners who have very specific goals for not just where they want their school to be at, but where they want their life to be. And sometimes, especially small business owners, and I come from a very entrepreneurial family. My family, my mother runs restaurants back in the Midwest, which is a very tough business. I mean, martial arts schools is pretty time consuming too, but the restaurant business is a very tough business. And one of the things that I learned through that process is that an entrepreneur, number one, is in many cases a very lonely existence because there aren't a lot of people that you can talk to about being an entrepreneur. But number two is you have to very clearly and in no uncertain terms define whether you run the business or the business runs you. And in a lot of cases, we work, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, whatever it is, and at the end of the road have not created any lifestyle for ourselves. We've created a job, but we forgot somewhere along the way that the reason we wanted to work so hard was to create great outcomes for our students, to change their lives, to create a better world, but also to be able to enjoy the world. And we talked to Miko a few weeks ago, and his ultimate goal was to be able, he's from Israel, and his ultimate goal is to be able to travel back to his home for a month of the year or 2 months of the year. And he was never able to do that in his martial arts school until he systemized everything, until he had everything, you know, systemized, documented, you know, recorded, put on tape, you know, that sort of thing. And now he's able to create that lifestyle that he wants for himself. So let's talk a little bit about that. As part of that Millionaire Wealth Group, that's a big focus for us, is how do we create a business that will facilitate the type of lifestyle that we want to have? What's your thinking on that right now? What are your ultimate goals for your business, and where do you want to be at in the next 5 years, and you know, kind of share that with the listeners, and we'll expand on that.
Okay. You know, I was just thinking about the Miko thing yesterday a little bit, you know, because I remember him talking when we were down in Florida at that last mastermind meeting, and he was there in Israel, what was it, 5 weeks?
Yeah, 6 weeks last year, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and until that point, it's like, man, I never thought about taking 5 weeks off. It just, you know, it was, I much like you, I came from a farming background, so there was never, ever any days off. And it was cold all the time, it seemed like. But, you know, it was that mindset of you just work, you work, you work, you work. And, you know, and I think a lot of people get caught into that a little bit, and it's hard to break that pattern. You know, 3 years ago was the first time, or 2 years ago, 3 years ago was the first time in 7 years I took a vacation. And it was only for like 4 days. And now this last year I spent a week in Belize, and I went to, where else? I took a trip someplace else for 3-4 days. And, you know, it's like now my mindset is much different on where, you know, again, having that life outside of karate. And, you know, in the next few years, getting my school to a point of where I can have somebody who's in here teaching full-time You know, me taking care of the operations, them taking care of the actual teaching aspects of it, to which it finally dawned on me not so long ago. It's like, you know, if I'm going to have somebody teaching here for me on a regular basis, I need to create an environment where they can have a very good financial future. You know, it's up to that point, it was always about, okay, I got to make a living for me. It's like, no, I got to make a living for me. Plus, I got to have this a financially viable option for somebody else if I'm ever going to step away from it. You know, so that's become much more of the focus is, I guess, for lack of a better term, my exit strategy.
Right, right. And you know, it's kind of to reframe that a little bit. If once you get to that point, by the way, when the school is very highly systemized and we have a very highly trained staff in place, in almost every case that we've ever seen, right, in almost every case, the quality of the students gets better, not worse. And the reason is, well, first of all, you have to take your ego out of the equation for just a second. And some school owners say, well, I'm the best teacher, and I'm a great teacher, and my students are great.
Yeah, just ask all my students who quit.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And you're probably actually right. You're probably right. You probably are a great teacher. Your classes are probably very exciting. You probably have, you know, great student quality. Now, it's kind of like, you know, in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, sharpen the saw is the last habit, right? And it's the guy in the tree, and he's sitting on the tree limb, and he's sawing away, and he's not making any chips, right? He's not making any sawdust. And the guy walks by and he says, hey, you know, why don't you take a minute and sharpen your saw so that you can get through the tree branch? And the guy in the tree says, can't do it, don't have any time, I'm too busy, I can't take the time to sharpen my saw, I got to just keep sawing, right? And a lot of times small business owners, especially small business owners in this type of an industry, a small, tight-knit industry, tend to get into that rut where they never have the ability to step away from the business 2 steps and look at the business objectively. Instead, they're in the business, and all the results that they're getting are subjective because they're doing it all.
Yep.
So a great example is, you know, one of the things that you're measuring very, very well now, and everybody has to measure very well, is, you know, what's the call to conversion ratio? What's the rate that people call and actually come in for an appointment? Well, in many, many one-man shows, they never track that ratio, because what would it mean if they had a bad ratio? That means that they're not very good on the phone, right? And they would have to fix themselves. And most people don't want to hear that. You know, many entrepreneurs want to think that, you know, that they're going to have the best ratios. And what happened, I know in my case, and I know in many cases that I've seen, as soon as I had a very highly trained staff, and they were very, very good at this, their ratios were better than my ratios in a lot of things. You know, my call to conversion ratio went up when I stopped answering the phone for a lot of reasons. And one of them was because the person that was answering the phone, all they thought about was, how do I answer the phone and how do I get an enrollment appointment?
Yeah, I was just going to say that because I had very much a similar deal with that, because, you know, for being on the owner end of it, you're like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this. Oh, the phone's ringing. Hey, geez, you know, yeah, I want to get this person in, but, you know, I got a lot of other stuff to do. Where, yeah, your program director's thought is, how am I going to get this person in the door and help them?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The owner has way too many things on their mind and should, you know, frankly should. You should be thinking about marketing. You should be thinking about selling. You should be thinking about teaching. You should be thinking about retention, all that. So, therefore, if you can train highly train a staff member to take some of that load off your plate, in many, many, many cases, they're going to be better at it than you were anyway. So that's definitely an eye-opening experience from a school owner standpoint. So,
well, I think another part of it, too, is a lot of owners have to really decide, do they want to be a legitimate school owner, or is this just a hobby that they kind of want to make a little bit better? You know, I do some jujitsu as well, and the person that teaches me jujitsu has a club. You know, and that's all he wants. He doesn't want it any bigger than that. There's 20 guys. We go in there and we, you know, twist each other's arms off every week. And, you know, and that's the deal that he wants. And he has that very defined. And I think a lot of guys think they want to have a big school but don't want to make the sacrifices and the changes to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly doesn't come about by hoping.
No.
You know, it's definitely a strategic approach. Well, fantastic. Let's move on.
Okay.
The next thing is obviously we've got a system in place for how students call us and what happens then and bringing them in for the intros and setting all that up. Let's talk a little bit about your retention systems. What specific things do you have in place that maybe one of the listeners of the call might be able to implement in their school to get really strong retention rates?
A couple things. One of the big things is that personal touch from the instructor. You know, we talk about, you know, you're in class, you have the three contact rule, you know, using your name, personal touch, shoulder touch, whatever type of thing, eye contact. But then having that personal touch outside the school, I make sure that pretty much every week I have one of my staff members who writes up the address for five students, and I send them a good job card. You know, nice job this week. You know, it rotates so they're getting a card. You know, they get a card probably once a year, but it makes a big difference. I have kids who got that card 8 years ago. It's like, oh, I still have that card stuck in my dresser in the bedroom. You know, and that's the stuff that makes a huge difference. That's so simple to do that a lot of people miss. You know, and then going along the lines with actually in class, you know, doing the striping things, special events, you try to have at least one special event every month that the students do, and then kind of relaying into the marketing, it's oftentimes a special event where they get to bring a friend as well, so you're kind of killing two birds with one stone, so it's that type of approach.
Right, right. In fact, probably as you expand your staff, you would want to even make that good job card even more frequent. Our goal in the Mile High Karate System is for every student to get a good job note every 3 months.
Yeah.
So they get four a year. And really what it is, of course, we have a lot of leadership students in the class. So their goal is for every class that they teach to pick one student that will get a good job note that day. So at the end of the day, we're sending out sometimes 8, 10, 12, 20 good job cards. So, as you have the capacity in your staff, that's certainly something you'd want to expand on.
I want to backstep that a little bit. I do have my staff. I have the instructors like, here's these guys that were in class today, write them a card type of thing. But, like I said, above and beyond from me, there's no two ways around it. When you're the top dog in the school, they want to hear from you. And when they do, they think it's really good. Yeah, they like the other instructors, and they thank them for the cards and stuff like that. But, like I said, I constantly have kids say, I have that card you gave me from way back when. And that's what I said. Like, I want to make sure that once a year they get something from me.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, it's a very good point. Yeah, if you're the owner, whether you're the everyday instructor or not, yeah, that's a great idea. That's a good idea. Well, good. Okay, and the last thing. Obviously, there's the same four goals. We talk about this every call. There are four things that we have to be focused on in a school: enrollments, renewals, retention, and quality. And what have you implemented lately or in the last 12 months that has been a really big winner for you on the student quality side of things? What type of quality control systems are you using? What type of measurements are you using to track those results?
For as far as student quality, I think a big part of that has been really training my instructors well to hold the students to a higher standard to begin with. You know, little Johnny has trouble with a kick, don't just say, it's close enough. Go over there and help little Johnny with a kick, pulling the kids in and saying, here, we're going to bring you in for a private lesson. We want to make sure this gets straightened out. Doing those types of things. Again, just standard progress checks, make sure that quality is there. Also finding out from them as part of their promotion is sending home their letters of intent to promote, which part of it is mom and dad have to fill it out that, they're acting like a karate student at home. They're thinking like a black belt at home. Their teacher also has to fill out a form that says, they're thinking like a black belt at school as well. And if not, we want to find out what that issue is, and we want to resolve that issue. So, those are ways that are fairly straightforward to just make sure everybody's toeing the line.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, the first thing that you said is like the key to all this, right? And I want to illustrate this because, frankly, I was a victim of this. And I don't mean me personally in my training, but I mean my school. I was at one point a part of a big organization, and what happened was, as time progressed, the quality standards were lowered and lowered and lowered and lowered. And each time the quality standards or the requirements for the student was lowered, we saw that the performance level of the student would go down, not up. Mm-hmm. And your thinking is this. The thinking is, well, the five-year-olds aren't able to learn a 25-move form, so I'll cut it in half and I'll only teach them 10 moves, right? Or and it's good thinking, right? It's a good concept to make it age-appropriate for them. But what ends up happening is that permeates the culture of your school, and the quality standard goes down. Therefore, people stop striving to meet the quality standards. And now I've completely reversed that in my school over the last 4 years, and 5 years. And now we require more of every student than ever before, and the pass rate is higher than it ever has been before. So is the end outcome quality of the student. We just had a black belt exam in our school, in one of our schools, 2 weeks ago. And, you know, 6- and 7-year-old students did 11 forms. They did 4 weapon forms. They did, you know, all sorts of sparring counters and sparring combinations, and they live sparred for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, you know, all that sort of thing. And had I continued to lower the bar, the quality standards would keep getting lower, but when you decide to make it as high as you possibly can, right, and expect them to accomplish it, they will, you know. Now, you have to give them, like you said, as much help as possible. You gotta make sure that you're giving them as much attention in class as they deserve and that they need, and extra attention and all that sort of stuff. So the first thing you said, I think, is extremely valuable
part of what, you know, we do with that as well, you know, and it's like you said, having, you know, we did the same thing. We dummied the system down for a long, long time till it got to a point of where they weren't doing much of anything. Well, you know, we kind of took it back the other way, and now I'm at a point where we're on rotating curriculum. So, you know, depending on the level, they'll see the same thing 2 to 3 times before they graduate out of that level. And what I always tell the parents when the first time they go through that cycle, you know, it's a lot of stuff. It's going to be a little ugly, but that's okay. By the time they get ready to graduate out of this level, it's going to look really sharp, you know, because they're going to get it. You know, but as part of that is from an instructor standpoint, because I used to be just super critical. If you got to step back, say, you know, this is a lot of stuff for that kid. It's going to be ugly at first, and that's okay.
Absolutely, yeah. And the analogy that we always use on that is confidence leads to confidence. And obviously the goal within the first, you know, few hours or few days of a person's training is to make them feel competent, to make them feel that they can accomplish something. And that leads through repetition to confidence when they know that they can accomplish it, when they know that they have accomplished it. So that's good. That's exactly right. Well, good. Well, so very interesting. Let me ask you this: as far as the direction you're taking your school now, obviously we've already talked about very high quality standards. We've talked about very high communication quality with the parents and the students and that sort of thing. What's next for you? What's the next step in your career that you're looking at or that you're kind of pushing yourself to be able to accomplish?
The biggest thing that it'll really work towards my school growth, again, having that build up to a point of where I can step away from it, is getting away from episodic marketing and getting to a marketing that's formatted, that we're doing X number of things every month, you know, and so that's been my big goal for this year. And I've already started towards the end of this year, but coming into 2008 is, you know, one major internal promotion every month, 2 to 3 minor internal promotions every month, one major external promotion every month, plus advertising and direct mail every month. And, you know, it's like in November I did this, big influx of students. You know, December I did it a little bit, and partly because playing catch up with a couple other things, and it's like, oh no, not January, I got to make sure I have this, this, and this. So I have pretty much all the major stuff listed out for next year, all 12 months, plus probably half of the minor stuff. So, you know, my goal is to have 10 to 15 things a month that are going on that are bringing in prospects. And then, converting from there. So that's always been an issue with my school of, like I said, episodic marketing. It's like, okay, we're going to do this one really great thing, and then it's, you know, 2 months of not doing anything, and then hoping for the phone to ring, you know, and making sure I'm doing things that the phone is ringing.
Absolutely. Here's the describe. Let me know if this describes what you experience. Here's how martial arts school owner's life is. Right, you get up in the morning, you kiss the wife, you go to the school. Right, you do whatever promotions you're doing. You handle the business of the day. Then you teach class all night. Then you go back home. Now, in that whole day, almost anything that gets in front of you is perceived to be more urgent than marketing.
Yes.
Right. So the phone rings, you stop what you're doing, you go pick the phone up. Somebody walks in the door, you stop what you're doing, you go talk to the person that walked in the door. You know, there are all sorts of distractions. And almost everything is more urgent visually than marketing is. But almost nothing is more important, right? I mean, there are very few things that are more important than driving traffic to the school. So what happens is all the other very, very important and very urgent stuff gets in the way, and the one thing that tends to suffer the most is planning for your marketing or executing on the marketing, you know? And in a lot of cases, and I would say almost all cases, if you're an ATMA member, you've got more marketing materials, more flyers, more ad slicks, more postcards, more direct mail letters, more press releases, more tools than you'll ever need for your entire whole life, right? Although it's very important to have the current seasonal stuff and things like that. But the problem usually isn't that. The problem is executing, right? The problem is customizing and executing, and that seems to be what takes the time, and
yeah,
working on solutions on that. But does that sound familiar?
Yeah, well, I'm sitting right here looking at my computer of newspaper ad that I have that was due 2 days ago. You know, and so, you know, it's like, my computer went down last week, I had this happen, I had another. So, yeah, you know, I still have to force myself to do the marketing aspect. It's like, you know, part of it is changing your mindset on it. It used to be, like you said, it's like, oh, man, I don't want to do it, it's a pain in the butt, it's this, that. It's like, now it's kind of getting excited about trying to create it, you know, and there's that learning curve of, you know, studying other copywriters and marketers and things like that, and seeing their work and training on it and practicing on it, and, you know, and it's a little bit of a load, but after a while, like I said, you get to a point where some of the stuff you do starts working, and then it gets to be exciting. It's like, okay, what can I create next? You know, so, yeah, initially, it's no fun, and I'd rather pull teeth than do it, but you know, now it's the mindset has changed a little bit, especially, like I said, when I have the successful pieces, like, okay, what can I create next that's going to be even better?
Yeah, absolutely. Which, you know, of course, marketing wasn't really the focus of what we want to talk about today, but it probably bears a little explanation. In a direct marketing approach, which is, you know, the most effective for small businesses, it's very important to do what you said, to test your marketing pieces and to be very sequential rather than episodic. And what you described was, okay, I have this piece from November that generated, you know, 21 phone calls. Okay, that's a pretty good piece, right? Well, what can I do to beat that, right? What can I do to make that work in December and in January and in February? And what happens in most cases is kind of what you described. Everybody gets a bunch of steam built up over the Christmas break, and they blast a big direct mail or email or whatever campaign for the new year, have a whole big influx of students. Then they get so busy serving the students that they've generated that they forgot to market for more students. And then February and March aren't very good, right? So it's very important to do what you said. You must be disciplined. You have to discipline yourself to do the work, to do the marketing. You have to focus on the students, absolutely. But you also have to focus on when the students aren't there or over the weekend or whatever it is. You have to discipline yourself to getting marketing done. That's the lifeblood of the business. So I think that was a valuable lesson, and definitely.
I mean, the good part of it is just delegating. You know, that's where that part of, you know, small school owners, they gotta, you know, and I'm still pretty terrible about it, of delegating as much as possible. You don't have to be out on the floor every class every night. Let somebody else teach one of those classes one day a week so you can sit in the office and figure out the things that need to be taken care of, get your marketing done, get your, you know, your promotions done, figure out what your numbers are. Is your enrollments up or down? You know, what's your conversion rates? You know, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. tracking those numbers and testing is the most vital skill set. And there are a lot of tools at your disposal to help you with that. So hope that's illuminating. Well, very good. One last topic,
mm-hmm.
and you know we've got just a few minutes left on the line, but I really appreciate your time so far, Ron.
Yep.
One last topic. Obviously, we talked a little bit about the mastermind effect that you've been involved in, and that I've been involved in for a long time as well. Tell us a little bit about how important you feel it is to surround yourself with other success stories, and how important it is to surround yourself with people who are better at certain things than you are. If you think about, again, the daily life of a martial arts school owner, it's, wake up in the morning, kiss, the wife, go to the school, deal with youth groups and scout troops and PE teachers and school administrators and whoever else my prospects are, maybe health club prospect, things like that, other business owners. And then in the evening I teach, the classes, which is mostly, children in many schools' cases, and then a certain percentage of adults. And then I go back home and repeat that. And not once during that day was I able to surround myself by other entrepreneurs, by other similar business owners who have the same daily problems that I have or that have solutions to some of the problems that maybe I have. And it's very rare that we even have anybody to talk to about that stuff. So what's your experience been on that, and how has that benefited you, and what you're thinking about surrounding yourself by people that are similarly thinking and that have similar goals and expectations?
Well, a few things, actually. One is it opens a bigger reality to you. You think you got a good idea what things are like until, classic example, we're at that wealth meeting in Fort Lauderdale. It's the International Boat Show. There's Ferraris driving around like there's no tomorrow, and Maseratis, and, all these multi-million dollar boats, and you don't realize it till you're there. It's like, holy cow, this is a little different world, and there's a little more out there than I might have realized. And, you sit around like all those guys in that mastermind group, all phenomenal successes, and you just get a bigger picture, and it's like, oh, okay, this is what I can aspire to, and this is what I can really do with this if I put my mind to it. So, that's a big part of it. Part of it is you don't have a chance to sit with somebody who's, at that higher level than you every day. So, pick up a book that's at a higher level than you every day. That's has been one of the best things I've done, is just every day reading something of, somebody who's doing it better. Whether they're doing it better in sales, doing it better in marketing, doing it better as an entrepreneur and as a whole. Because like you said, being an entrepreneur is a pretty lonely deal, because very few people get it. Their vision isn't your vision. And so you gotta kind of put up a barrier there sometimes and build that wall to protect yourself. But yeah, and just get around as many influential people as you can. I mean, everybody's got influential people in their schools. For me, one of the most influential people in my school, we have Schneider National, which is the big trucking company. So I think the largest independently owned trucking company in the United States, and their CEO, his children take class with me, and I get to talk to him on a regular basis. It's just like, that guy's got a different attitude about things, and I like his attitude and his insights and stuff. So, yeah, you got to surround yourself with that as much as humanly possible. Otherwise, it's very easy to get drawn down by everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And the example that I've heard in many instances is like, friends and family. I mean, your family loves you. They will always love you. They'll always be there for what you need. But in most cases, if they're not entrepreneurs, if they're not business owners, then they simply don't think the way a business owner thinks. And they think the way perhaps an employee thinks, or they think the way perhaps, a contractor thinks or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't think the way an entrepreneur has to think. And we have to think about how to create something great and how to create a service that is very valuable to the customers and that massively over-delivers on the customer's needs. And an employee thinks about you know, how do I spend the next 8 hours so that I can get a paycheck, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very different mindset. And like you said, it's important to block out the bad and let in the good. You know, it's important to block out the negative naysayers and let in the good. And a great example that you said is at the Fort Lauderdale show. We just got back, you know, a few weeks ago. And like you said, multi-million dollar yachts. And we went and looked at the Lamborghinis and the, you know, the Gallardo, which I'm just a big fan of. And anybody that says the economy's bad, well, that may be true.
They haven't been to Fort Lauderdale.
That's right. There may be ups and downs in economic, you know, circles and in cycles. But, you know, there's always a huge amount of wealth in the world. And there's always a huge amount of people that are very successful. And you can either surround yourself with them, or you can surround yourself with those who are not as successful. And you know, that decision's up to you, but make a conscious decision.
Well, it's the old saying that your income is about equal of your five closest friends, and, you know, look at what your income is, and if you don't like it, find five new friends.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, from a student experience standpoint, one of the, of course, the benefits of martial arts is being surrounded by goal-oriented other students, right?
Yep.
So instead of being in the, you know, the high school gang or the elementary school group of miscreants, right, you're surrounded by students who are training on a regular basis, who are goal-oriented and are focused on accomplishing something really great, and that's a great benefit for parents to understand. But also, just think about the impact that has on the student, right? We're surrounding them by people who are really focused on accomplishing something amazing. And if they can continue that the rest of their life, oh, my gosh, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, just think about how much more energized you feel at the end of that day when you get down to the end with that group that's just driving hard and they're trying to get to that next level. It makes you want to go that much harder and get to that next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sum of the five closest friends is an interesting paradigm. And another lesson in the class that kind of relates is you don't choose your friends, but you can choose the environment that your friends come from, right?
Yeah.
So you can surround yourself with a negative, anti-supportive environment, and you'll have negative, anti-supportive friends. Or you can surround yourself with a positive, supportive environment, and you'll have positive, supportive friends. So, you know, exactly the same thing. Well, fantastic. Ron, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, absolutely.
I really appreciate it. The line is going to cut us off here in a few minutes, I think.
Yep.
But thanks so much for sharing your insights, and I know a lot of the members are going to get some value out of that. And
I hope so.
I really, really, really look forward to speaking to you again. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Toby.
Thanks, Ron. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.